and reading Bob is Born. Darwin, this is Eric. And then he turned to Eric, and Eric said, and Eric, this is Darwin. He is one of my dearest ones. And when Baba said that, I you know, that broke me up. Something else happened before that, and that was the embrace. You know, Baba revealed so much of himself all the time anyway, that I wonder what they really meant, that he had so many veils, and I'm sure he did. But how could you conceal divine purity, divine beauty, divine love, divine reality? These things shone through, you know, they just shone through. But there were times when he could and did remove, seem to pull back more of the veils and reveal more of himself. He just could do that. And he lovingly did that, especially on this occasion. This was one of those very priceless, precious occasions when he did that, when I came to him. He would just somehow pull that back and reveal himself. But of course also there would be a great wave of love. And of course I fell into his arms and experienced total bliss. You know, Baba made it possible for us not only to come to him in the physical, but also in the spirit, completely in the spirit. Our meeting with him was complete, just complete. Nothing was missing. Nothing held back, no barriers, nothing. One came to him completely. And when one fell into his arms, it was just beyond your wildest dreams. So just bliss, sheer bliss. One could not describe the sweetness, the tender beauty of his love. It went very deep within, you know. So wonderful. So when Baba introduced me as one of his dearest ones, great tears fell from my eyes. I, even though Baba had, in a letter, when we were living in Myrtle Beach, referred to me as chosen disciple, I could never really fully believe this. I thought he was, you know, I don't know, but I just could not believe that. So when he said this, one of my dearest ones, it just broke me up. And I looked at him through bitter tears, and I said, how can you say that? Imagine saying that to Baba. And he became sober. He said, I do not humor you. I do not humor you. And then I had a little package. Before coming to India, I thought, gee, I must bring some kind of a present to Baba. But what can you bring? You know, the avatar, what can you bring? So I thought of many things, but finally I knew it had to be something simple. So I thought of a scarf. I'd read or heard somewhere that a scarf is an acceptable gift. So I got a nice white scarf. I wrapped it up, and I brought it. And when I had come in that room, I put it on the table. And now it was time for me to give this to Baba. And I picked it up, and it looked so small and so insignificant, you know. And so I lamely gave it to Baba and said, I brought you some little thing. And Baba, who is very intensely aware of our thoughts and feelings, and quickly responded, and how noble he was. He said, he accepted that, of course, but he said, you yourself are the greatest gift you could have brought. God's gift to me. How beautiful. And I realized later what he meant, because I had given my life to God years before. And now God was giving me as a gift to him. So I could not possibly put in clothes and words the feelings, you know. I was destroyed. So somehow I got through that, and I guess each of the others did, because they were around the next day and so on. And so then we began to meet with Baba every day here in this big room on the lower. And it had some furnishings. I believe it had a carpet, and very comfortable chairs were there for the Western men, and a sofa for Baba to sit on, and a coffee table. And Baba had thought of our every comfort, and it was really nice. And before coming to India, I thought to myself, when we get there, Baba will probably give us some profound spiritual discourses, which he did. You know, they were very profound, and they're available in the account of the Three Incredible Weeks. But it didn't take long before we began to realize that something much more important was happening at a deeper level, and it had nothing to do with these things he was explaining to us, you know, at this surface level. We were already at a deeper level, and things were happening. One could not remain static. Things changed. Our sense of dimensions of who we are and what we are. There was a dissolving process. And we were in a realm which was new and wonderful, but where we'd never been before. And it was somehow in the realm of Baba's being. And this went on day after day, and sometimes we would play music on a gramophone, sometimes Western music, sometimes Qawwali, and Baba would explain the words, you know, so beautiful. And each day was so many incredible, every little thing seemed so incredible. But after a couple of days, I stood out there on the hill one morning, and I was thinking, how is it possible there are so many, there must be thousands and maybe millions of people throughout the world who far more than I deserve to be here. But here I am, you know. It was just one of those things I couldn't figure out. But I did resolve to somehow respond to this divine generosity of Baba's, this compassion, by trying to surrender everything I could to him. This was my opportunity of how many lives, I don't know, to be with the Christ. And to have the opportunity of giving all, really giving all, within, you know. So, and you know, it didn't occur to me that Baba knew my thoughts and that he himself had precipitated this. I didn't realize that at the time. But I was plunged into a deep inner working. And I suppose the others were too, I don't know. So I began giving more and giving more to Baba, and unloading and unloading and unloading, and surrendering more and more. But after a while, I reached a blockage, and I couldn't go any further. I couldn't do anything with it. And I thought, well, that's that, you know. It didn't occur to me that Baba would intervene or that he was aware of all this that was going on and even precipitated. But I was happy that I was able to have surrendered as much. But a day or two later, I still had this sense of a blockage there. And we were out on the top of the hill, outside of the wall. And I think it was the day that Godavari and I and the women from Sikori had come over. And I was perhaps standing 12 or 15 feet away from Baba, and he didn't look at me at all. But I was aware the instant this wave of love, grace, left him, I could sense it leaving. I never know how to describe it, where a wave of fire, a wave of light, a wave of beauty, of divine love, of power, I don't know how to describe it, but it was a wave of grace. And it just, there was no ceremony, you know, no outer show, no one else knew what was going on, but this just came and just swept this blockage right away. And as it was going, it was only then I was holding on to it, even as it was going, that I realized that I was holding on to it all the time. And this is what we do. We struggle with things instead of letting them go, you know, and be done with them. But in the face of Baba's divine love and power, nothing could resist. I knew then absolutely that nothing could stand in the way of Baba's, the fire of his love. They were swept away. And I knew that, of course, Baba knew that I knew the whole thing, and he knew that I knew, you know, both ways. But still there was no outer sign. But then I just stood there, just dumbfounded, and I was experiencing great bliss, a sense of completion, of completeness, a restored to wholeness. I felt whole, complete. I had no desires or wishes or anything. No sense of the future or the past, complete. And it was so blissful that I could only think of one thing. And that was the 23rd Psalm. This was a living experience given by him, the 23rd Psalm. And I simply said to myself, because I recognize this is what it is, he restoreth my soul. I had found my soul. He had given me this restoration to my very soul. This is, was his gift. And so he was going down the hill after that, and he was going to light the duni. And I thought to myself, he is the duni. He is the fire, you know. He is the fire of divine love. And after a while, I began to realize that this is the meaning of the Zoroastrian flame, the flame of divine love, you see. So these were some of the initial experiences. This was a tremendous experience. Imagine him giving such a gift. So, of course, we went with him down to Lower Mehrabad, and we were there when Baba lit the sandalwood in the Duni fire. And then the Mandali stood along each side, and Baba sat in a chair, and they sang his arti, a very, very beautiful, very, very beautiful thing. And then there were some, a bunch of children from Arangan village there, and Baba later got them all around and had some pictures taken. And he seemed to love to be with them, and they loved to be with him. And of course, there was a man there with a big elephant horn. And Baba signaled him to give a blast on that. And that was the signal to start going to Arangan village. And some of the men who dance were there, and they started their dance. You know, it's a very rhythmic, to drums, you know, dance. And they danced all the way, about a quarter of a mile, to Arangan village. And the villagers had been preparing for this visit. And the whole visit there was like living pages from a new Testament. So colorful, so beautiful, so filled with many loving incidents that took place. He was welcomed by everyone, and Baba took us into the homes of very, very poor people who would prostrate themselves at his feet. And they had Ranguli on the ground, you know, as auspicious designs for Baba's coming. And they had prepared a place for Baba to sit, and he went there and sat, and some girls danced, and they brought fruit, and Baba, always in this light, cheerful mood, began tossing the fruit around, you know, in his usual way. And there was one time when he sat sort of in a scalloped in front of a scalloped edged window, and he was just loaded with flowers. And on that occasion, he had become Krishna. I saw him as Krishna in that village, as well as Christ. The Krishna came through very strongly. And as we walked through the crowd, sometimes beautiful things would happen, like some of the Mandali would have to hold hands around Baba in order for him to move through the crowd that was just aching to touch his feet, anything, you know, to get near to him. And there was one little old lady way off to the side. And she had a tray with camphor and matches, and she was hoping to get to Baba to perform the arti ceremony. And the crowd was so dense that she couldn't get through. And I saw her, and I looked at Baba, and Baba didn't seem to see her, and it looked as though we were going right by. And all of a sudden, Baba stopped, looked over her way, and smiled. And that motion for people to make the way for her. And what a beautiful sight. And so she came over, sort of gingerly, hardly believing her good fortune. And she came in front of Baba, and she was so nervous by then that she took the matches and she had to light this lamp. And the matches fell from her hand, and she looked at Baba to see if he would wait, and she reached down. And while she's reaching for the matches, Baba's love glancing here, love glancing there, and everyone is getting his love glances. And finally she does get her matches and strikes him and lights the little lamp, waves it in front of Baba, and sings her arti. So beautiful, so beautiful. There were so many scenes like that, and I was walking with Malcolm Schloss, And every now and then we'd look at each other and we'd shake our heads and we would say, it's just incredible. It's just incredible. It was so incredible. I use that term, but there's an intensity of the reality of his being that no words can clothe or convey. It is an intensity of reality where veils are rent asunder, inner veils, and you see into realms that you couldn't see into before, the realms of the beauty of his being. And of course, that day was one of those incredible days. And I know as we would gather here with him from day to day, I began to realize some of what was happening at inner levels. Whereas when I came here, there were the usual inner clouds and limitations and walls and all of that. But I discovered that the fog had been dispelled. And where there was a wall before, now there was a window and a great vista. And on all sides, this had happened. One could see great distances into the beauty of his love. This was the beauty. This is the reality, which one could see. I suppose inner centers that I don't know anything about were opened up. But all of this was happening because of simply being around Baba. You know, just we didn't. There were no ceremonies, nothing, no yoga exercise, nothing. Just being around him. We were caught afire. And this just went on. So Baba had been telling us that, and I suppose for his own working, that within a few months he would be attacked by strangers, and he would be wounded, and he would actually die. What a terrible thought, even. What a terrible thing it would happen within just a few months. And I said to some of the mandalas, are we to believe that? They would say, we don't know. And I talked to Alexander Markey, and he too, we wondered about it. But then I checked with my own heart, and I felt that Baba wants us to believe it for his own purposes, even to suffer the anguish of the thought and the prospects of such a terrible thing happening. So I tried to accept it, and it did deepen my feelings about him. My feelings about him were always closely related to those of Jesus, of the Christ, although I also know that he is all of the others. But we come by our own special ways that he draws us through our life experience, and that happened to be mine. And I began to wonder, well, what will our relationship be with him when he drops his body? Will we lose him? Will he go into a state of bliss? And will we have no more access to him? And so one day we were coming up from Lower Mehrabad with him. And as we crested the hill, I know it was so much like walking over the hills of Galilee with Jesus that I was just amazed, you know. It's just so Galilean. And as often would happen on occasions like that, something from the New Testament would flash through my mind. And this time it was Jesus saying, you all say yes, yes, but you do not do the things I tell you. And when I thought that, Baba quickly gave me a sharp glance, just a quick glance. And then we walked around and we came in and we sat in there. And I was way over the other side of the room, not right up close to Baba. And so Baba picked up the board, you know, and he didn't look at me at all, but there was sort of a bland expression on his face. He said, you all say yes, yes, but you do not do. And I'm beginning to, wonder, wow, you know. And then without still looking at me at all, he made a few comments and said, I am the Ancient One, and when I drop my body, you all will come to love me more and more and see me as I really am. That answered that question. We will not lose him. We will be enabled to love him more and more and see him as he really is. This is for everyone. And when he was saying these things, I was saying to myself, how can you fathom this being? And still without looking at me, he said, with a bland expression on his face, I am so unfathomable that even I sometimes cannot fathom everything. See, I was the only one who knew what he was talking about that time. But someone else on other occasions would be saying, he would be saying something that I would say, what's he talking about? But someone else would know what he meant, you see. And, but of course he was intensely aware of all of our thoughts, feelings, moods, and all of that. And, so he didn't have us, sitting like yogis, but, sometimes he would have us sit and think of him, try to visualize him and feel him. And we would feel him coming in on us, you know, see his face and feel his love, of course. How could you help it? Even though he was the mayor of Zad when we were doing this and so on. And then one day he took us to Sikori, which was a wonderful day. And when we got there, well, there many things along the way, we stopped at Rahuri and I got some beautiful pictures of Baba looking right into the camera. Very beautiful. And Baba had us try to tell funny stories. I was never good at that, around Baba anyway. But Charles Purdom and some of the others had a few ready stories. And Baba seemed entertained. But we finally got to Sikori, and we moved around and with Baba, and they were showing us the premises. And it was nice to meet Godavari Mai and see this place where Baba's beloved master, Upasni Maharaj, had lived and where Baba had stayed with him. It was wonderful to see this. And Baba oftentimes would like to sit down and lean against a post or a tree. And so he did this. He sat down, and there was a tree just outside the building. And a man who looked like a monk with one part of his robe off his shoulder came by and stood and looked lovingly at Baba and sang a hymn or a song, you know, which was very nice. And Baba took us in where we could see the Kanyas and the nuns and how they lived and all of that. And then we were led into a building for our lunch. And you know, around Baba, I want to read this because it's better than having me tell you, I think. Sometimes being with Baba was an experience so far removed from ordinary experiences that every moment with him seemed to be imbued with a divine significance, too profound to fathom or ever to be fully explained. Sometimes while with him, one might become aware of an unfolding event which was so filled with meaning that one was astonished and almost overwhelmed to find oneself a part of what was happening. One of these situations took place in Sikori on Monday, September 20th, 1954. Baba had taken us to Sikori to visit the ashram of one of his masters, the late Upasni Maharaj. When it came time for lunch, Godavari Mai led Baba, his close Indian mandali, and the Westerners into a building. The Indian mandali members were seated cross-legged on the floor of the entrance room and were served their food on large green leaves. They ate Indian fashion with their fingers. Meantime, Godavari Mai led Baba and the Westerners up a rather narrow stairway and into an, quote, upper room, which was especially prepared for us. Tables were arranged, adjoining each other, almost in the shape of a U. Baba and Godavari Mai sat at the head table, while the Westerners were seated along the two extending tables, all on the outside of the U, so that all could see Baba and Godavari Mai. The nuns in yellow saris and the candidates in white saris stood along the walls in back of the Westerners. Baba looked exceptionally radiant and beautiful, but there was also a look of deep suffering. Adoringly at beloved Baba as he sang a sweet hymn of praise to him. Our eyes were drinking in the exquisite beauty of this scene. From the moment we had come into this, quote, upper room with Baba, I had been reminded of the scene of the Last Supper with Jesus. But now, beautiful scene, had come into this, quote, upper room with Baba, I had been reminded of the scene of the last with Jesus. But now, while beholding this poignantly beautiful scene, I became intensely aware that in some mysterious way, I was in the midst of a living experience of Christ and the Last Supper. Here we were, in the simplicity, here we were in the upper room, and there he was in our midst, sitting there in sublime simplicity, silently filling that room and illuminating our innermost beings with the unmistakable sweetness and wonder of his divinity. Well nigh overwhelmed with the awesome significance of this scene, I felt reluctant to actually see some of the well-prepared and delicious food which was placed before us. Much more illuminating our innermost beings with the unmistakable sweetness and wonder of his divinity. Well nigh overwhelmed with the awesome significance of this scene, I felt reluctant to actually start to eat some of the well-prepared and delicious food which was placed before us, being much more inclined to continue to behold and remain absorbed in this living page of a New Testament. Like the other, however, I did eat some of the food, but Baba scarcely touched his food. Towards the meal, Baba deftly changed the mood and atmosphere slightly by playfully tossing fruit to various ones around the room. At the end, Baba said, quote, "To find me, you have to lose yourself. But these are just words when spoken and heard. Losing oneself and finding oneself is for very few lovers who lies in their sleeves." So that was one more wonderful. "You have to lose yourself. But these are just words when spoken and heard. Losing oneself and finding oneself is for very few lovers who carry their lives in their sleeves." So that was one more wonderful experience. And before we were to leave Sukhore, we were to go to the tomb of Upasanimaj Maharaj and bow down and either touch our forehead to the tombstone or kiss it. And some had already done this. Baba had started, and some Mandali and some of the Westerners. And I stood back, and somehow I guess I hadn't fully realized it's all right to bow down to Upasanimaj Maharaj, because as I stood there, the thought crossed my mind, strangely enough, have I come halfway around the world to bow down to strange gods? And instantly, Baba, who was several feet away, looked over my direction and quickly walked over to me, and with a big smile on his face, and it was just then my turn, he put one hand on my forehead and another on my back, and as I bowed down, of course, I bowed to his hand, something I could not possibly object to. And I straightened up, and Baba looked at me, much to say, okay. You see how quickly he responded to my dilemma. And apparently, you know, in order to make it less conspicuous, he did the same thing to two or three others. And this was somehow the way he would often respond to our dilemmas. Of course, our day at Sukhore was a very wonderful one. But and I want to tell you about the last drink. We actually did have what Baba called the last drink here in this room. And on this day, Baba had a big tray of tall glasses of fruit juice brought in, enough for each one to have a glass of this juice. And Baba said, "This is not the Last Supper, but this is the last drink." And he said, "I'm very happy to say that from among you there is none who will betray me, but someone has to do that." And then he sent the Eastern Mandali out of the room, all except Erich, and told Erich to close the door. And then Baba became very solemn. And you know, you could feel that this was a profoundly important scene in which we were participating with him. And then he took each glass and sipped from it personally before handing each one of us such a glass. But he said, "Take your time and drink slowly. But before you do, take a moment and turn to God and ask him from the bottom of your heart to help you to love him honestly." And then drink slowly, which we did. Very precious. And then he had Erich open the door and have the Eastern Mandali came in, and he also had more fruit juice brought in and gave each of them a glass. But this was one of the solemn and beautiful moments that we had with Beloved Baba there. And there were times when I wanted to try to catch some of the feelings that were so strange to me. And I'll read the page that I typed here. September 23rd, 1954. I hope it won't confuse anyone. But it somehow caught the philosophical insight of the experience being here. Does everything function? The opposites, the gains, the losses, the beginnings and endings? Let them function automatically. Don't interfere. Just observe and rise as you let go of one after the other the necessary functions of the dual realm. Cease striving to mold the functioning elements of your aspect of the dual realm into truth. You will only achieve another crystallization of one of the opposites in that realm. What you seek, what you are, is not in that realm. So let it function only to give you consciousness in that realm and be detached. In the dual realm, we do and must struggle with contrasting values. In this realm, we must adhere to the karmic laws and strive to improve our characters, to purify and live in accordance with our ideal. This we will always continue to do. Beyond the dual realm, however, the same values do not hold true. One cannot escape the vortex of the dual realm while clinging to it. It is not a matter of perfecting oneself in the dual realm. It is a matter of escaping the bondage of identifying oneself in that realm at all. Escape from the dual realm means a new rate of vibration, a new perspective of values, a new sense of dissociation from the necessary functioning elements of the dual realm. Why strive to become something in the dual realm when you have to let the whole realm go? It functions. It functions. Let it function and be free. So then, the conclusion was, dance for joy in the meaningless array, for all is void in the sight of God. Cease thy struggles with the coils of illusion. Let it go unchallenged, unclaimed, and smile with God. For all is a trick, a joke which never was. Be not deceived by the enchantment of a distant freedom. O ye who were never bound, laugh at the troubled Maya.
Hey, Baba.
Hey, Baba. So, in conclusion, I would like to say that Baba had been filling us with so much love and filling us with so much love and wonder that finally we reached a day when he had us sitting with him in there and in this big room here. And there was no more need for music. There was no need for discourses. There was no need for anything, just to sit there and look at this lovely being. And he allowed us to do this. And it was a warm September afternoon with a gentle breeze blowing through those windows high up on the wall. And Baba sat there and like a beautiful flower, and just waves of love would just roll from him. Just waves of love. And that room became love's sanctuary. So beautiful. And as the wind was sighing through those windows up on the wall, it made a noise. And Baba smiled and said, you know, pointed to that, and we nodded. No one wanted to break the enchantment of that quiet time, and we were just silent, and we sat there, and Baba's beauty was just irresistible. For my part, I could not take my eyes from his lovely face, and it turned out to be one of those occasions when, as I watched him, it looked like veils began to fall away from his face. And that which was exquisitely beautiful became indescribably more beautiful. And love, which was pure divine love, became universal, illimitable, measureless love. And whereas one can ordinarily see into a being a little bit and you see all the, you know, the things of an ordinary person, but there was nothing there. There were none of those things. Just an endless, measureless beyond of pure, sweet, beautiful timeless love. Baba was drawing us deeply into his being. We were drawn deeply into his being. And we were just completely melted away. We were just melted away. It was so glorious that, finally, of course, as all good things come to an end, Baba embraced us one by one, lovingly, ever so lovingly, and left. And the Westerners, the Easterners and the Westerners left, all except two people who were too intoxicated to move. And one was one of the Eastern men, Cutwal, Sabha Cutwal. He sat here and I sat there. We just looked at each other. We couldn't move. We could not move. It was so wonderful. And I thought, oh, if I could only catch something of this in words so that, you know, it would last, so that maybe perhaps someone would have some idea of what it was like. So then I wrote this. Today, Baba really and truly fulfilled the 23rd Psalm. This was enough time. As we sat about him in the inner room where we gather, he asked different ones what we were thinking. When it came to Moyers, gradually the veils had been slipping away from him ever since the time of his arrival with us. But today they really fell away. When he asked me what I was thinking, I said, "Of you, Baba, you are all love." Of course, I had seen that he is all love. I knew that is what he was. So then this was what he gave me to last forever. Let the song of the wind ever remind you of my love. Let its soul-healing balm sigh through your being wherever you are. And know that I have loved you as only God can love. And be sure that I will love you thus throughout eternity. Know, beloved, that you are mine forever. That I have called you from the realm of illusion to caress you with love. With love divine. Jai Baba.
Jai Baba.
The question I had was, do you have any stories of how Baba dealt with people, Madhuli and others, who were having close personal contact with each other, how he dealt with them?
And what's your question, Chris? We'll get all the questions out in advance.
Last week you told us the first interesting incident that happened when you first came to Baba, and I was wondering what the second was.
And Gary?
I have a question. I'd like to know how
Now you come forward, your question. Of course, his question is really very, very interesting. And I will just give you different examples how Baba would treat the Mandali. First thing, you know, when Baba came here, so there were Hindus, Muslims, Parsis, different persons were there. And when Baba came here, he said that, you know, when there is any festival, religious function, you must observe. And the Hindus, they were very, very particular about it. And Baba was encouraging. And Baba would say that, just see how much interest they take in having observing the ceremonies. And whatever they would want, Baba would give. There were others, of course. They would just think that why Baba was taking so much interest in Hindu religious ceremonies. What was the reason? And of course they would just talk, and sometimes they would feel very bad. Some say when there is some Parsi festival, and Baba would just ignore. And Baba would not give any encouragement to them. So they would think that here, you know, Baba, of course, he encourages only Hindu religious ceremonies, and it wanes on and on and on. And then it went to that extent that one day, of course, they held a meeting. The Parsis and Muslims, they held a meeting. That why, you know, why it should be so? Why our festival should not be observed here? So we must tell Baba that, of course, he should also give us the opportunity. Now, next day, Baba comes, and the deputation was there. And they said that they just decided this unanimously. And, you know, Baba said, very good, very good. All this time, you know, I was just thinking that these people, they like ceremonies. So I was encouraging them because they wanted the ceremony should be observed. So I was encouraging. And all the time I was under this impression that you wanted God. They wanted ceremonies. And you wanted God. And that's why, you know, I was under this impression that because you wanted God, I did not encourage you for ceremonies. And these people wanted only ceremonies, so I would encourage them. But today, good, you know, you have opened my eyes that you too wanted ceremonies. So now today, just decide who wants God and who wants ceremonies. And everybody was quiet. Here, those who were observing ceremonies, they stopped. And they never asked for ceremonies that Baba should encourage. They stopped. And here, those who felt jealous that, you know, only Baba encourages this type of ceremonies, Hindu ceremonies, and we don't get a chance, they also stop thinking about it. So here the ceremonies and God. So he said that I was under this impression that you wanted God, and that's why I never encouraged. But today I came to know that, you know, you also want ceremonies. All right, have ceremonies. And since then, of course, that ceremonies, they stopped. Stopped in such a, to such an extent that they were asked for this. Otherwise, every time the ceremonies would be there, and of course, Baba would encourage them. Then there is another thing, this caste system in India. So the Baba said to the Hindus, they were very orthodox in this, that, you know, nobody, Brahmin should cook the food, and nobody should touch the food. So for them, of course, separate food would be cooked, and for others, of course, there was another kitchen. And always Baba would tell them that according to your religion, of course, you know, you must observe everything. So it went on and on and on. And but simultaneously, he was also working. So their minds were also working, and they were thinking that whether they were doing something wrong. So someone, one Brahmin family was brought here, and Baba would encourage them like anything, you must observe your religion. So one day he comes and he says that, you know, I would like to participate in the common kitchen. I said, no, never do so. It is no good. You are Hindu, you must observe, you must not take food elsewhere. Your kitchen, you know, separate kitchen, you must do it. Now what happened? It went on and on. Then the servant, of course, the cook should be Brahmin. So that one who was cooking the food, he left the job. When he left the job, Baba said, now you decide what you should do. You must find out another cook. Of course,